Okay, wait, let me get this hooked up. Where are we? DTD, let me get Patrick's number up here. It's upside down. La la la. You guys, are we filming too? Okay. Not live and almost from Beverly Hills, it's the Bob Dean Show. Yay. I want to say thank you all for watching us, and thank you, Sammy Genio, for, and Joe, what's your damn last name? Joe White, my new buddy Joe White, he is our film, our studio choreographer, blah, blah, blah. These guys are the techs and they're cool as shit. And thank you for, now you can watch us. I know, not what you thought, huh? I want to welcome Louie. Louie, what's your damn last name?
Crying.
He does a lot of homework.
Louie LaCava, that's it. Thank you. That's where I got confused. And everybody knows Kathy St. George, my co-host for the evening, my guest co-host and returning guest because she's a guest. And Louie, this is Louie's second time on the show. Thank you for coming back, both of you guys.
Thank you.
Let's see. This is episode of my producer, Sammy Junior, is here. Yay. And Dennis Olson, my buddy over here, who is officially my co-something because he keeps everything in line in the podcast Bible, which is a book that Stephen Beth Levino gave me for my birthday 2 years ago. Thank you. And we want to give a shout out to Zach Kernan. Hey, Zach. In Bloomington, Indiana. Yay. Zach was one of the original members of our staff here, if that's what we call it, our group. Our group here. What do I need to do? He does coordinate things from Bloomington, Indiana. There is such a place. Now, what we're going to do first is we're going to call my blast from the past call-in guest is my old friend in Nashville, Tennessee, Patrick Curley. So we're going to call Patrick right now. Are you okay?
It's not a raid, is it?
Someone's knocking at the...
Lee is here.
Oh, Lee, can we cut? It's Lee Cirillo. Let her in.
I love it.
I'm Mother Inferior.
Mother Inferior.
Oh, my God.
I was losing my mind. I thought it was Wednesday.
No. So when did class start again?
I think last week. Not
okay,
sure.
Well, I'm going to talk to Cindy tomorrow. Okay. All right. Now, where were we?
You're calling your buddy in.
Huh?
You were going to call.
Okay. Are we ready now?
Yeah.
We're going back. Just want to say our friend Lee Cirillo just joined us. Lee is a local comedian, a national comedian who's funny as shit, and she just showed up in a nun's costume. But that's all another story. How do I work this phone? I know y'all in radio land. Okay, here we go. We're calling Patrick Curley.
Hello? Yeah.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello, Patrick. Is this Patrick Curley in Nashville, Tennessee?
It is.
Hi, Patrick Curley. It's Bob Dean from The Bob Dean Show. Yay. And we are coming to you. We are audio and videotaping from the L.A. School of Comedy in beautiful Persian Westwood, California.
Wait, Bob, did you put him on speakerphone?
Yeah.
Is that almost Beverly Hills?
Yeah. What, should I not?
Oh, you want your headphones. Okay,
never mind. I need this. Okay, hold on, Patrick. I'm just as much of an idiot as I used to be, but you guys can't hear him without the headphones, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're not. Okay. That's fine.
All right.
Fine.
Well, then now we're going back to speaker. Okay. Are you there? Sorry, Patrick. I'm a little technical difficulty because of me. So anyway, it's good to hear your voice, old buddy.
It's good to talk to you, Bob.
All right. Hold on. Anyway, I can't hear you with that. I can hear myself, but I can't hear him.
I guess he could take.
Is he on speakerphone right now?
Are you on speakerphone now? Hold on. Patrick, I know. Hold on. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I can just barely hear him, but that's good. But can you guys hear him? You
no,
can't.
Now we can't at all.
Okay, hold on. Patrick, okay. Don't go away, baby. Okay, can you hear me now? Hello?
What pains in the ass as we are.
All right, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, everybody out in radio and TV land. Patrick, sorry, I just discombobulated things. It's great to hear your voice. Ladies and gentlemen, Patrick Curley and I have been friends for, I would say, what, Pat, 35 years?
Something like that.
Since we were a year old.
Uh-huh.
Patrick and I grew up in the same suburb of Nashville, Tennessee, Bellevue. Patrick went to Catholic school. Father Ryan High School, as I went to Bellevue High School, and But we still ran in the same circle of friends, and we've been friends ever since. And I didn't come out until I was 28, but Patrick and I are both big old homos. Oh, is that okay if I tell people you're out of the closet now, Pat?
You're what?
It's okay if I tell people that you're out of the closet now? I would think so, yeah. Well, you're in the studio. Well, I've got my friends here, Louie Lavaca and Kathy St. George, that you will see when we air the episode that you'll be watching.
Hi.
And Louie is an aficionado of mobsters and gangsters. He's our second visit on the show. And Kathy St. George is the lovely Miss August of 1983.
1982.
And 1982, and she's my co-host, but she comes on all the time. So you'll see us. I'm waving at you now, Pat. Hi, bud. And you'll see us when the show airs on Friday. So anyway, so listen, I was just telling everybody that we go back a long way, back when I don't know what Nashville is like now. Unfortunately, you were bashed recently, huh? Well, do you mind telling our audience about what happened? Because I think it's just an awareness that bullshit like this still happens.
Well, Nashville kind of has a neighborhood now. We're down on Church Street where a lot of gay bars are. And I was coming out of one of the bars. I'm not going to highlight it with a name because they haven't bothered to cooperate with the police. But I walked out and I was bashed from behind and they just smashed my face in. I've got 37 fractures.
Oh, my God.
Gosh.
Patrick, I'm so sorry. I mean, we follow each other through Facebook, and I saw your pictures, and it was mortifying. And I don't know what to tell you except you're in my prayers. But what the hell? Just tell us the name of the bar.
Huh?
Tell us the name of the bar.
Canvas.
Yeah. Okay, that's it. And for those of you that don't know, on Church Street, the World's End, which Hal Barty owned for a long time, the World's End was it used to be Mississippi Whiskers before that. Remember, Patrick?
Yep.
And that's when right until I got fired for my attitude. Every 3 years like clockwork. As a matter of fact, I put a Facebook post up just a few minutes ago, Patrick, that I worked at this place, Wolfgang's Steakhouse in Beverly Hills, for 8 years. Tomorrow, it's the longest. Did you? Thank you. It's the longest bar gig I've ever had without getting fired for my attitude. And you know why I keep my mouth shut? Because I'm an old bartender and it's too hard to find a job in L.A. I swear to God, Pat, because you know how charming I am. But the World's End was like the coolest place in the world. And that brought life back to, Nashville was such a sleepy little town way back when we were growing up.
Yeah.
But now there's a whole bunch of bars down around that area, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I got jumped like that on Miami Beach years ago, and they're such cowards, man, when they come up behind you like that.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I got two, like, brass.
I saw it coming,
Exactly. Pat, so what was it, like, late at night, late around the 2 hour, or was it somewhere?
Well, I wrong about 1:30, 1:45.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a message out to you fucking Nashville gay-bashing cowards. You're going to burn in hell. And that's right. Seriously. Yeah. Well, I got jumped from behind on Washington Avenue on a Friday night at like 10:30. And now I got hit in the temples first with like some brass knuckles or something. But then, the little whatever, it doesn't matter. I'm just glad you're doing okay. Yeah. So what else is going on? I mean, Nashville is like the Crane City now, right? Well, congratulations.
If there's another flood, I can't go check in your condo in your
location
anymore.
Oh, listen, Patrick, that stupid flood, it still has me wrecked. It really does because, I actually spoke to you the day of the flood because you were saying that your brother had seen, because there was no communique coming in and out of Nashville at that time. But through Facebook, I was speaking to you and you said your brother had been over there and it didn't look good in my neighborhood, which was really sad. But, it's just something.
I'm glad I could drive over close enough to go tell you that it's flooded.
Well, it's something I wish I could get over and I can't because because it was taken. And the thing about it is that I was insured. My parents bought that place new and it was the family home, And I was insured out the ass for everything but flood. And which is another long, painful story. And then I got zero FEMA. This is important that people know this now. Y'all need to have flood insurance, even if you live on the 40th floor, because your insurance company will find a way to screw you out of what is yours and you pay for. And right. And I was zero FEMA because I didn't live on the property, even though people that live were living in trailers were getting $200,000. But it's really a painful thing. But congratulations to you. So you're over on the – I know there's a lot of new development over in West Nashville. Vol, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, that's great. What was that restaurant that we used to love to go to all the time where you had to walk along the plank? Blue Moon, yeah. Is that still there?
I can
crawl
there.
Good. Well, see, that's awesome, man. Oh, that's great. I can't wait. Yeah, I want to come and visit so bad, but I still haven't, you know, I haven't visually seen the old place that's been rebuilt, of course. But I want to come back and Blue Moon, what fun. I cannot believe I never fell over into that damn murky water by the boats there. Right? Well, Patrick, I know it kind of hurts to talk. I just wanted to call and tell you that thanks for being on the Bob Dean Show. Yay. And you're my blast from the past guest. And please tell everybody Bob Dean says hey.
I will, Bob. I will.
And tell everybody to subscribe.
When I can get out the
back. Put some pictures up now. And your family's all doing good. Are your folks still over in Cross Timbers, but
Valley West.
Valley West. Are they No?
They had to get out of the three-story house. They moved, actually, on down. They're still out in Bellevue. They just moved across the river into those new things out, like, right across the bridge.
Well, you tell them that Bob Dean says, hey. Yep, Valley West, that's where I lost my virginity, but I'm not going to tell you whose house it was in. I love you, Pat Curley. Talk to you soon. And remember to subscribe to the Bob Dean Show on iTunes and tell everybody in Nashville, yay. All right.
Bye.
I love you, Pat.
Love you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
That was my blast from the past guest, Patrick J. Curley. We had a lot of fun together, a lot of running from the police times. And anyway, now, thank you all for listening. Yay. Louis LaCava and Kathy St. George. Now, Louie, Kathy, of course, as I mentioned before, and I know I tend to repeat myself, so y'all tell me to reel it back in when I'm going all over the place. But Kathy, of course, this is, what, your fifth, I think, time?
Yeah, I think so.
Fourth or fifth time, and you are welcome anytime because you are too much
fun. I crash it usually.
Well, it's all right by me, and she'll be back next week, too, when Dwayne Henry is on the show.
Yay.
And Louie LaCava, I wanted him to come back before, but he's had a lot of listeners and now viewers of the Bob Dean Show.
Yay.
Who have asked for a repeat, recurrence? Coming back on the show. And I wanted to have my friend Beth Lavino, who I know is going to be watching this, to come on, but she was nervous, like this is some big time show. But anyway, Louie, we were just talking all about everything from Dillinger to Capone and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
And we're just going to get back and we just pick that up from wherever. What do you want to start with? Anything?
Well, Reggie's reminding me to mention that when
Reggie Mantle is in our audience, ladies and gentlemen. Yay. From those of you who know the Germs, Reggie is, you'll just look it up.
Yeah.
They're cool.
Well, we visited Al Capone's house in Chicago many years ago, and the guy who was living there took us on a tour of the house, which I recounted on.
That's right. Tell us again, though, because that's really cool. It was like a long. Is it a town like a row home that's really long, or is it a freestanding home? Because I remember you saying it was really long, and you had to.
Yeah, you know, if there was other homes built next to it, it could be like a row home looking thing. It's very long and narrow, but it's actually freestanding, and it's what they call a prairie style home. It's really a. Two homes, one over the other, like a duplex. And so the guy took us on a tour of this house. And as we were leaving, he came out and he said he was refurbishing his basement. And he took down some walls that people had built. And in the wall, he found a little silver late 1800s breakover pistol.
Sweet.
And he showed it to us right there, you know, and... We thought it was, I think it would be worth a lot of money, but I regret not offering him everything I had at the moment.
Well, just the excitement of finding something, you know, we all remember, we talked about Geraldo Rivera and that ridiculous Al Capone's vault thing, but this guy really did find something in Al Capone.
He really did find something, and if you watch the hype, Geraldo's part of the show was ridiculous, but Geraldo had a lot of really good guests on that show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The follow-up, too, was terrific.
But right. Of course, the people who had actually been there and photographers and I think the one guy's name is Berardi. He was the first guy in the first news photographer on the scene of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
That's what we didn't get to the last
time.
That's right. The St. Valentine's Day
Massacre. We could save it for next February.
No, you'll be back on before then.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
Doesn't Al Capone have a place in Nashville? Didn't he have there was a place, it's a fort, because I went there when my friends were recording, and there was a place, and it was all, it's like they call it the fort, and it's now a recording studio.
No, that's Dolly Parton.
No, seriously, it was a gangster.
Really? Because no, I think I know what you're talking about, honestly, and that would be the 12 South neighborhood, which was beautiful. 12 South at the turn of the century. It's now a very hip and happening place, but Colleen and Michael DeGregory.
Yeah, she might have been alive then.
But Dolly Parton's studio is in it's a fortress, and it's in, I don't know, and it's on 12th Avenue South, right close to the park, and on where those of you in Nashville know Becker's Bakery and Mirror used to be in Trim. I don't know if it's still there. Right across from Mafioso's and the Crackin' Suds.
I have to Google this.
Do what?
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Okay. It's okay.
Oh, somebody's telling me how to, okay. Oh, that's right. Focus. Stop rambling. Come on, give me a break,
don't
y'all.
Don't you have this medicine for that?
No. Now I forgot where I was. We're talking about Dolly Parton's recording studio. Is it a fortress? It's got this huge wall around it, and it's on 12th Avenue South.
But those guys had places in many states. Capone had a place up in Wisconsin, apparently, that was a large Victorian home that was turned into a fortress kind of thing. And over in Indiana, there was another place, and he came through L.A., actually, and I don't know if he bought anything here, but...
Well, that's interesting, because I didn't know...
Hot Springs, Arkansas.
You know what? He very well may have had a place.
I'm pretty sure. I'm going to Google it.
Yeah, please do. That'd be really interesting, because as long as I grew up there, I never even heard... But it could very well be. Now, let's get on to the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Yes.
Tell us what you know. Because it's a topic that we've seen movies, read books, and that's, read a little bit here and there. But if anybody knows what really happened, it's going to be Louis. He wasn't there, but close enough.
Well, there's people who've written books that know quite a bit. But obviously, February 14th, 1929, about 11 in the morning, whatever. But I think the place to start with the St. Valentine's Day Massacre is that not a lot is actually known, but they actually two cars pulled up to the SMC garage on North State Street in Chicago.
And now, the SMC, was that a front for
organized
crime, but it was an actual mechanics shop, yes?
Yeah, they were posing as, shippers. They would ship it, like, UPS or something today. And... but it was really a place that had been in use for a couple months by the Northside Gang. They had booze hidden in the rafters, and trucks would come and be serviced. A large part of the old gangster world was actually trucking. It's where the Teamsters come from and all that business. Mm-hmm. But
Now, Prohibition started when?
Well...
Was this before?
It was voted in as a constitutional amendment in 1919, but I believe it takes a year for a constitutional amendment to actually take effect. So it's like the middle of January 1920.
Okay, but Prohibition was in fact in effect, and that's one of smuggling booze and that sort of thing.
Yes, and the funny thing about Prohibition, they called it National Prohibition because many states were already dry from the 1800s. Mm-hmm. I think Kansas may have been dry from the 1850s. So
a lot of southern counties still
and
are.
Then there was, glad I missed it.
Yeah, right? Well, you didn't miss anything because there was plenty of booze.
I was going to say, it's like people walking around now with their...
I just had to go to base.
Arrowhead water's full of vodka.
Right?
I've never done that before, though.
So there was national... There was also wartime prohibition of World War I of alcohol. So, different grains could be used to make food, to feed troops and what have you. So... So this was National Prohibition, Northsiders, and they came in. A car arrived at the back of the building, which is never portrayed in the movies, and a car arrived at the front of the building. And they used a trick that was common to, I believe, a gang called Egan's Rats out of St. Louis. They were wiped out. They came up to Chicago. and were known as the American Boys in Chicago, which is important because the Southsiders were largely Italian.
And okay, wait. So that's really interesting. So they were called the what from St. Louis?
Egan's Rats.
Egan's Rats, and they were wiped out in St. Louis. How?
I don't know that full story, but okay. It's a combination of police action and gangs, which often police action is an extension of gangs.
So what was left of this organization moved to Chicago. Right. Okay.
And they were called the American Boys, and they were Capone was using them as like a hit crew because they looked white. They looked American, you know, with quotes. And but the Italians were on the South Side, and they were recognizable as such. So you brought in these other people who were of a different ethnicity.
Sorry, hold that thought.
That's a nun.
There's a nun with an iPhone smoking a cigarette. A leather nun with an iPhone, and I'm not exaggerating.
Thank you.
Is that what you were looking up?
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee Shirillo.
But it wasn't Neville, it was Teagle or
Mary. Could be more than one.
If you know how to turn it off, to you.
See, I'm technically challenged myself.
Well, you never know what's gonna happen at the Bobby Show. Yay!
Yay. I blame the Catholic Church.
Exactly. Thank you, Sammy Jr., who's going to tell us. I don't know how to turn my phone off either, Lee. And look, you look like a new one. But, you know, as much as I hate phones, remember to subscribe to The Bob Dean Show.
Yay.
On iTunes. We are still hovering at over 6,000 listeners, which is great. We're going to get back to your thought on just then. And at some point, if it's awesome. Sammy, we can do this. I would like for Lee to come on just for and say hello. Please. Lee, you're dressed like a friggin'. Okay, so anyway, let's get back to this for now. Where we were talking about the car that came up to the back of the garage.
Yeah, these guys who were hired, they used a trick, a ruse, if you will, of what Egan's Rats had been known to use down in St. Louis, which was you dress your gangsters up as cops.
Ah.
So the cops lead the way in, and the guys in there, and there was seven of them and a dog, and they think it's a raid. But they're not worried about a raid by the police because they own the police and the judges and everything. So they go, okay,
this is fascinating
okay.
Now.
And then, but in their in back of the cops come in more guys, and they've got at least two Thompson submachine guns and a shotgun, based on the number of shell casings found on the floor. Mm-hmm. There was 70 of them, which means a 20-round clip and a 50-round clip, and then there was two shotgun shells found. And so they kill all these guys, and the setup of the hit is Capone style, wherein it's highly planned, detailed. They had lookouts across the street in two different apartments for weeks in advance. And what doesn't look like a Capone hit is that seven people died. Usually his hits were pretty precision. You get one guy and that's the guy you get. Mm. But this was seven guys. They don't know if whoever was running it somehow got out of hand or what. But the only person to truly survive it was the dog. It was a German Shepherd named Highball.
Thank goodness for the, you know.
Yeah.
So they had their hands in everything too?
Yes.
Was there a big drug trade back then?
You know, that's an interesting question because we're legalizing marijuana now and people are saying, you know, that'll lower a lot of criminality and things. But when they legalized alcohol again in 1933-34, the gangs began bringing in heroin. That's where we get our big heroin history.
Well, see, that's because
Lucky Luciano in particular.
For some reason, I guess in my head, I'm always thinking that like drugs in America started in the 60s. You know, and when in fact it's been a lot of it's because then when I watch old movies about jazz musicians and stuff, then I'm like, oh, wait a minute, this stuff's been around.
It becomes mainstream.
Right?
If you sang jazz, you had to do heroin. It was just right? Came with it. Or blues especially.
Yeah.
But it becomes mainstream in the 60s. It spreads out. But it was hitting fringe groups, you know. I mean, Cab Calloway was doing cocaine and what have you. all the way.
Not like you couldn't go to any friggin' club on any corner like you can now and get whatever.
And they probably said that's when it was really good. Remember when they realized it back when it was really good?
Not like this crap it's cut with.
Yeah, right?
I mean, that I've heard that it's cut with these days.
Who knows?
But
so you asked what they were into. Yeah,
right, right.
They had a dog track in competition with Capone's dog trap. Dog track. They were in competition, of course, with booze and gambling and really in a big way, labor racketeering and the unions and things. So these guys in that building, one guy was a mechanic, but the rest were kind of like the officers of the gang. They weren't just mugs with dirty nails. You know, yeah, these guys were living
They were the big wigs.
They were living in hotels and making decisions and killing people. So, I mean, two of them were the longtime hitmen, the Guzenberg brothers. And so they had actually burned down Capone's dog track, which is made of wood, which is kind of funny. And Capone's response was to use the city. This is very Capone, by the way. He used the city officials that he owned to have the road to their dog track torn up for construction and just left like that. Just, you know, blockades on the road, under construction, it's all torn up and screw you guys, you know, without any violence or anything, you know. So,
well, that's pretty incredible.
So these guys were in competition in a lot of areas, and it's not really known which area got them killed or why this number of people. It was a national outrage, even among gangsters. He was called on the carpet. They met in Atlantic City after this. And the other, you know, the amount of heat this brought down really ticked the other national gangsters off.
Yeah, because draw too much attention to
on her. You know.
Because even though the whole world, like, knows that they're there, nobody wants to talk about it kind of thing.
As long as you get your booze.
Well, Kathy just said, you know, it sort of brought attention. You know, people finally had to recognize that all this underground black market, et cetera, was going on.
And hijacking trucks from the airport. That was a big thing. You
know? Oh, right, right. In Boston, right?
I just remember getting a Giorgio perfume as a gift from someone, and then I saw on the news that that's the most hijacked, that and Cabbage Patch Dolls were the most. I go, oh, well, I guess that clarifies what he does.
And some of that is portrayed in Goodfellas, the movie. Uh-huh. They hijacked, and that's a true story where they hijacked.
Well, things are still falling off trucks around Los Angeles.
Thank God.
I've heard. Thank God.
They will pay you to let things fall off trucks. Uh-huh. You know?
So. Well, now, but do you think like that? So, as far as like when Capone died and this and that, is that how? I mean, but the families continued per se. Whatever happened to after Capone passed?
Oh, that's
what happened
question.
To his infrastructure?
That's a good question, and I don't have the complete answer to that because I'm not so interested in later crime stuff. But yes, there. I mean, Sam Giancana and people like this. I can't remember all their names. I'm sorry, but there was still an infrastructure, and you know, when Capone went to prison. I think it was in 33. He also went for a short period in 29 after the St. Valentine's Day massacre. There was such outrage. He went
for littering.
For leaving quick. Stop leaving bodies around. He went to Philadelphia and arranged for himself and his bodyguard to get arrested on weapons charges so he could lay low during the heat, and then he came back out. But there was an entire infrastructure, and it made little difference with Capone gone. They could just go about business more quietly.
Yeah, I was just wondering who like became... I'm putting my hat back.
I've read
on.
Different
who became
accounts.
Like the Don? Was it called a Don back then? Or?
No, that's kind of the old world mafioso thing. Over here,
what is it? There's Capo. There's who's the main guy though? What's it called again?
They have a boss. They have an underboss. They have a consigliere who's like a mediator for the gang between gang members within the gang and that kind of thing. The Chicago structure of their gang is different from the New York structure,
right?
Which is the one that's famous that we all know, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's really interesting. It's minutia, but here we go. It's Capone's empire was more set up based on what you were dealing with. So if you were in charge of the trucks versus gambling versus this or that, there would be what we would call like a czar over that that industry within the Capone empire. Mm-hmm. And then people would answer from all over the empire to him, as opposed to the New York system where you have a capo and he has a crew under him and they are a geographic entity and they answer to that capo.
Uh-huh.
You see, but this is based, the Capone method was based on what you were doing, what industry you were concerned with. So,
well, now jumping over to Bonnie and Clyde now, Dennis and I, by the way, I will be at the Ha Ha Comedy Club in Toluca Lake on June 11th, Monday night. So y'all come and see me. And the reason I bring that up is because while I was waiting to speak to the owner, I was looking in the magazine and they were talking about what was the sheriff's name that set up Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, okay.
Because that's a really interesting thing how he bought.
Okay, so Bonnie and Clyde set up a jailbreak from Huntsville Prison, okay? They leave guns out, and a guard is killed during that, and it makes, I think his name was Lee Simmons, the head of Texas prisons. And let me tell you, I mean, let's get this straight for the record. Lee Simmons was a complete murdering crook, okay? So he had hit squads that would go to prisons and kill prisoners who were a problem.
Is this Huntsville, Alabama, or Huntsville,
Texas?
This is Texas. Okay.
Huntsville,
so then Lee
Simmons.
Okay.
And so after this jailbreak made him look bad, he got Frank Hamer, who was a Texas Ranger, out of retirement. They had elected a FEMA governor on a reform ticket, if I'm remembering properly. And Frank Hamer and his three brothers, who were all Texas Rangers, kind of like a gang, they did not sit well with these reforms. You're being too soft on Frank Hamer. Well, let's get it. Clyde was accused at most of being involved in like 11 killings, and the ones he pulled the trigger on is maybe 3 or 4. Hamer, the conservative estimate is 65 people killed.
Wow.
So, you know, let's get it straight who these people are, right? So he was not going to continue. He knew the writing was on the wall. If he continued doing what he was doing under this new governor, he would be in trouble, right, for just killing people instead of taking prisoners. So at any rate, they got him back out, Frank Hamer, and he put a squad together, a guy from the Dallas Police Department who I believe his name was Ted Hinton, who had actually seen Bonnie and Clyde and spoken with them and stuff in the past. And then he gets a couple guys out of Bienville Parish, Louisiana, to make it legal. In theory, he's working with them to catch Bonnie and Clyde and Smoot. Anyway, so that's how that gets set up. And they are being fed, which has only recently been uncovered, FBI tips on Bonnie and Clyde. Mm-hmm. So they knew pretty well where they were. There was informants and things, and they went out there and made the deal with, I forget his name now, but that guy and his father.
Right, and he bought the truck.
Henry Methvin and his father, Ivy. Clyde had purchased that truck for Ivy Methvin, and so they made a deal to not prosecute them. And
that's
they
how
set them up for the road. Oh yeah, 9 miles south of Gibbsland, Louisiana.
Cool
little logging area.
Tragic, but
area.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty place to die. But
well, that kind of reminds me of like I don't know if anybody remembers Buford Pusser of the Walking Tall movies.
Oh yes,
which was okay. That was huge. Buford Pusser was the sheriff. Whatever county it was in Tennessee, it was down there in Memphis. And he was like this good old boy who carried – literally, he was elected sheriff. What was it? McNary County, Tennessee. And I guess the actions were like in the early 70s up to – they ambushed him, which, he lost his wife and, you know, this and that and the other thing. And that's when he went over the edge. It didn't go over the edge. He had been fighting crime. But the good old boy network, it's very similar to that. ambushed him and his wife, and she was killed, and his jaw was wired shut. But then he started taking this big 2x4 and, you know, taking justice his own way. Now, I remember also reading that some say, I'm not trying to defame anybody, or don't start sending me hate mail because you don't know where to send it anyway, suckers.
I'll tell you his address.
It's 1718. Los Angeles, California. But anyway, but he was just as crooked. It was a dry county, so there was legal moonshine, that sort of thing. But it's kind of along that lines.
And who chooses a 2x4?
It was a whole thing. But they made a movie about him, so right. Y'all can Google it. Walking Tall.
Like you're not a caveman,
right? But he beat the crap out of these guys with the 2x4. Is what it was. He didn't carry a gun.
I'm sure it makes for a good movie.
Well, it was. It's called Walking Tall, and you can Google it as you kids do. Google it.
So I brought some show and tell items.
Let's see what he's got.
So the first item, I'll preface by saying, none of you know Alvin Karpis, right? But in the classical era,
no.
Did you sleep with him?
You'd know it if you did, sister. No, Alvin Karpis was the last of the classical era Public Enemy number ones, which is in early to mid 30s. He's the last one. He's captured May 1st, 1936 in Louisiana. Coming, he accidentally left his apartment and got in his car, and the FBI, who had been ready to go in there and kill him, actually, were caught by surprise. They had brought no handcuffs, because you don't need to handcuff a dead body, and they had to tie him with one of their ties, but they surprised him with guns in the car and captured him. Anyway, he is the only classical era Public Enemy number one who survived the era. The FBI shot all the others in the back. He survived Alcatraz and McNeil's Island, and he was then deported. He was released early 60s. He'd served a life term to Canada, where he was from, and he didn't like Canada for whatever reason, so he moved to Spain, where he drank and had girls, and eventually accidentally dies of a prescription pill alcohol overdose. Anyway.
And his name again is?
Alvin Karpis. This is one of the books he wrote, and I'm going to save this mic before it falls over. And that is his autograph.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's a
Where did you find this?
A very good friend, Josh Curtis, bought it for me as a present.
Very nice.
And he had nice handwriting, too.
Well, yeah, you can see it's very...
you need to put a Mylar to protect it.
Yeah, you're probably right, right? It's very steady, but it's a little shaky with age by then. You know, this is probably done in the 70s. So you might want to take a picture of this, and you can edit it into the
thing. That's really cool.
At any rate, so that's that. Then number two is John Dillinger and Company, the first John Dillinger gang, as they term it, robbed Racine, Wisconsin on November 20th, 1933. And that bank has been torn down. But I have in my hot little hands these... are ceiling tiles from that bank that were over the head of John Dillinger and
that
company.
That is so freaking cool.
I'm so jealous.
May I touch one?
You certainly may. Would you like to see
Oh my gosh.
This is really awesome. From the bank in Racine, Wisconsin, you said it was his last?
No.
But
November 20th.
They tore it down, okay.
They tore it down, yes.
Oh how did you get a hold of these? And I love these kind of tiles.
I know.
This is great.
Josh purchased them, and they were online for sale.
You should have them put in a shop, you know, like...
I really should frame them, shouldn't I, with a little...
Aaron Brothers is having you go out of business. So
Aaron Brothers.
Get it.
I can't believe they're going out. That is so cool, man. Thank you so much for sharing.
Well, I'm not done, dear.
I know. I'm excited.
Okay, so... you can't hardly see this. We can take photos of this after if you like, but Fred Barker, Ma Barker's oldest son, was killed in Wichita, Kansas at the end of August of 1927. And these are little chips that were coming off his headstone.
Oh my God.
So this is off of Fred Barker's headstone, and he was the only one to receive a headstone because everybody else died horribly. His mother was wrongfully killed by the FBI in Florida with her son, who was rightfully killed, and the others. Another was killed in trying to escape Alcatraz. And Alvin Karpis talks about that. He was in jail with. It was the Karpis.
Now, what you say that Ma Barker was wrongfully killed, but what? Tell us more.
Ma Barker was in her 70s. Okay, Ma Barker. Was the mother of like four Barker brothers who were involved in crime in Oklahoma from early on, and they graduate to bank robbery, and they get with Alvin Karpis. They pull some of the most spectacular bank jobs of the era. Alvin Karpis is a very cold, calculating person, and even he says he's got a problem. He has no conscience. He's
was she too lenient?
He was killed
with her children.
She was an Okie. She was called Arizona Kate, actually, by many people. And the FBI had no idea she existed. She had no part in any crimes. They would get her an apartment in the same town they were in. They would visit her. She would listen to the radio and make, you know, jello mold food.
She knew that her boys were criminals, she didn't. Well, we're assuming that she knew her boys were criminals, but she herself has been glamorized by what, you know, movies and books.
Yeah, well,
to be
active part. Not, or let's be clear, not that's by what movies and books. As the FBI caught up with them in Florida and for 4 hours fired bullets into the house and killed her by mistake. At which point they went on hyperdrive, making her into the super criminal of the century.
Oh, see, that's what I'm asking. That explains. Okay.
Hollywood picks it up and they run with it, and it's never been corrected. But there was no wants or warrants for her. Mm-hmm. She was not even really known to them. A couple of their informants have mentioned her. They didn't want her, but they killed her and then lied about her.
Okay, but so in the spectacular shootout in Florida, that's where they figured they might as well go ahead and just include her in it.
Well, they didn't know she was in the house. Mm-hmm. They shot into the house for 4 hours.
Do you know what part of Florida this was in?
It's South Central, I think. It's an Indian name, and I cannot pronounce it.
I don't want to sprain
my tongue. So it's by a lake, and the house has just recently been moved, which is good. It's better than knocking it down.
Absolutely.
It's been saved. And
that's cool.
Very cool. It's a really nice house. And the people from that day to this have left the bullet holes in the house. And there's a lot of them. The original furniture is still in the house. And it also is all shot.
No kidding. Yeah, now, do these people live in the house now? Or it's like
I think they used it as a vacation home or something.
Oh, how cool is that?
It's very cool.
This next piece, remind me to tell you about the bullet holes in the wall from Scarface that I know in Miami.
There's even, we talked about Bonnie and Clyde, and they were in Joplin, where they killed two police officers who rolled up on them, you know, unwisely in the house in the shootout, and they died, and Bonnie and Clyde got away. But this is wood from the garage, you know, the understory. There was the above story and the lower story. This is wood from that garage.
Wow. This stuff to me, what I mean, honestly, fun. This is so cool, because this is friggin' history right here, and to have an actual part of it, it's just great.
I also have dirt from Jesse James' grave.
Do you really?
But
in the back?
Not with me.
Darn.
It's at home.
That is so friggin' awesome.
I'm growing a fern in it. No, I'm kidding.
A fern with the Tommy gun.
You can really grow things from
Dad. Yeah, this is cool.
Oh my God! I know. I can't believe that.
I have more from that grave, but I.
Well, you know, that's what I was going to say.
It's not.
No body parts, right?
It's not legal. Okay, so now we have the piece de resistance. John Dillinger killed July 22nd, 1934, in Chicago by the FBI, unarmed, shot in the back of. A bullet went through his side, and then the killing shot went through the back of his neck and out of his face. And then he was taken in the basement of a mortuary, and it was a circus, pure pandemonium chaos. And people were pretty much doing whatever they wanted, and college students showed up and what have you, and people were making molds of John Dillinger's face. About five of them were made, and the FBI grabbed a couple of them, and yada, yada, yada.
It's just...
And so to this day, you can buy casts made from those molds that night.
Is this what we have?
This is what we have, my friend.
Stop it.
Oh, my God.
Ay, ay, ay.
You are looking at the face of John Dillinger.
Oh, my God.
How he looked July 22nd, 1934.
No. Only on the Bob Dean Show. God. Yay! Louie, this is incredible.
I now guess don't drop it.
I won't.
I guess forensics wasn't around then where they keep you all off the...
No, but that's very interesting.
Oh my God, this is amazing and creepy as hell at the same time.
It is amazing.
Oh
this is
gosh.
John Dillinger's face. Louie,
and may I point out...
look at the hole.
Right.
Yeah.
The aberration, you can see the exit wound right under his eye.
Oh.
Now the FBI story is that he was going for a gun.
See the hole here. Pass that over to Kevin.
Yes.
That's incredible.
It's important. The gun the FBI produced saying it was John Dillinger's. Somebody at some point thought, well, let's look up the serial number on it, and it was produced after John Dillinger was dead. So they planted a gun on him. And
that is too weird.
Their story is
that's
that
so
he,
cool.
he whirled around to shoot them and they shot it. Him, but eyewitnesses there say he was shot through the side. He fell on the sidewalk. He got up on all fours, and one of them came over above him.
And hit him. That's
bang.
Where the
and that's
exit
where
wound
mark
is
comes
on the.
From.
Holy cow. That is amazing, Louie. Thank you. That is just wild. It's not a brooch. That is so neat. And what I was just going to ask you something else about that. And I wanted
so
it
cool.
my mind because I. That is just awesome. What was I going to ask you now? About, oh, this is what it was. Now, honestly, I'm not trying to make a joke. Seriously. This was something I remember going around. It's probably urban legend, but it just popped in my mind because somebody was telling me when we were kids that John Dillinger had like the biggest penis.
There you go. I knew he was going there.
Well, but we all heard it when we were kids, but is there any truth to that? That is known?
There is a truthful source to that. If you look in the newspapers, they altered the photos of John Dillinger on the morgue slab. Right? It was this reclining table, right? And he has a sheet over him, and the table has like a handle or something that's under the sheet that makes
gosh.
It look like he's well endowed. So that's where the story comes from. But the newspapers got rid of some of that because, oh my gosh, we can't have Mrs. Henderson looking at that over breakfast, right?
They don't want you to think that crime pays and you get a big schlong from it.
Well, you know, we've heard the same thing about like Milton Berle and Marty Robbins. I don't know where
Milton
came up.
Milton Berle for sure. Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, that is so cool, Louie. Thank you so much.
Oh my God, that is so good. I know. I'd have that like up where it.
I'm going to. I bought a frame for it, but I need a box. I don't know how to mount it in there.
Yeah.
That is so awesome. I don't know what to say. I'm speechless. I think that is absolutely totally cool, and it's.
I'm sure yours is the first podcast to discuss John Dillinger's.
John Dillinger. But what do you think about that on the Bob Dean Show?
Yay! And may I say, since we're on video now, I think you should include an eye roll with the cheering for
right. Thank you very much. I get so many eye rolls every day. That's why I'm starting to go cross-eyed. Between eye rolls and having arthritis in this hand for doing this. I do. That is so neat.
Very cool.
Well, I thought you'd enjoy
I absolutely
seeing
love
it.
That. Collectibles. I was mentioned the Scarface thing. In Miami, we all know that the movie Scarface, which was based on some actual guy. And I moved to Miami in 83. So the scene in the movie where they have the big shootout in the nightclub, that was actually a restaurant called Neon Leon's. And it was please God, my Miami friends. I can't remember because your father's mustache owned by Bill and Sally. Remember Bill, y'all, with the one leg and he would sit there. And I got to tell you the story quick. But anyway, your father's mustache was a pub, a great little mom and pop restaurant with a bar that was open until 5 a.m. next to Neon Leon's. So your father's mustache used to be a post office. And the point being is that the shootout was actually in Neon Leon's, and there's all these bullet holes that go down the side of the walls of the your father's mustache.
Interesting.
Wow.
Or there were a few. But that was pretty neat. Yeah, this place, they're both dead, so I can talk about them. This place was great.
Can't hurt their feelings.
That's the first job I ever had where I walked in on a Friday and said, here's your key. And they're like, why? And I said, because I quit. And I slammed my key down and the whole restaurant was like, ah! It wasn't my attitude. I quit that one.
Now,
anyway,
if you don't get bad attitude
but
from
Bill,
it,
the owner, he had lost his leg due to diabetes and he was kind of an unattractive man, you know, he'd come in from this. There was only one entrance and the food was great. And there was only one entrance in and out. It was like the old post office door. And you had to walk down this hallway. So you'd come in from the Miami Sun into this really dark restaurant. I shit you not. He'd have one foot on the floor, his stump up on a bar stool. And you had to stand there to let your eyes adjust. And your eyes would adjust, and he'd be like, hey, with a cigar hanging out. He'd like, welcome. I swear, it was the weirdest thing. There's this man with a cigar hanging out his teeth and his stump up on the bar. And he'd be like, come on in. And from behind the bar, you'd watch people's faces as their eyes adjusted. And they're like, uh-oh. Kathy, do you want to add anything? What's going on with you?
Well, except for these mystery pounds I keep gaining, I'm not sure. I'm just traveling a little bit. I was supposed to go to New York tomorrow, but I've postponed, which is perfect because now I can come and see you next week.
Excellent.
But, yeah, doing some autograph signings and things like that. And, you know.
Well, you brought this up on the first appearance, so I'm going to. How are your bed bug bites?
Oh, my God, yeah. Well, they're up. They're better. Oh, yeah, I went to North Carolina and...
Glamorous question.
Oh,
well, you know,
I was allergic to them. What can I say? I looked like this big... Oh, it was scary. And, I mean, Ubers would not pick me up. Nothing. You know, it was, like, really awful. I went to shake a woman's hand, and she goes, oh, no. Oh, no, I can't do that.
Well, see, I had no idea how they operated. I mean, you hear about... I just thought they were, like, that they came out at night. I had no
idea.
Well, they do, but
they do not ride home with you unless they get in your luggage. So never unpack your luggage on the bed because they will not ride home on your person.
I honestly have not stayed in a hotel or motel or anything since then. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it.
You know what? Michael told me, actually, you go in, you put your luggage in the tub. The bathtub, then you go in and you check around the mattress in the folds, and that's where they usually are, at the headboard.
So if you check, they're easy to spot.
Yeah, you should check first.
Thank you, Michael.
Because they're not little, they're not itty bitty. They're good.
Are you visiting from Manhattan? Thank
you. Yes, my friend Michael.
But they're not any bigger than.
Well, they're not so small you can't see them. Mm-hmm. You can see them.
But you can tell. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. This is really news to know.
Mm-hmm.
Because bed bugs, it's something that they're getting all over the place now.
And I was allergic to them, so I got blood poisoning.
So what do we do again, Mike? We put our luggage in, regardless of where you are, you put your luggage in the tub, then you go and you strip,
you just look around the edges of the mattresses and also the headboard.
Headboard, and they're the size of an apple seed. For some reason, well, that would be because for some reason I had in my mind that they were like the size of a ladybug.
And they shoot, they anesthetize you when they go, they bite you, so they actually numb you first, so you don't know they're there. And
how thoughtful.
Damn,
yes,
Lord,
I know,
God,
isn't that
heaven,
nice? It's like free
really
anesthesia,
didn't.
You know?
Like
the word for the bad part.
Like the time the dentist left the shit on my nose. I told you that story. They got me ready for them. Then they got called away and they forgot that I had the...
Oh, that happened to me too.
CO2?
Yeah, I got so high.
I got so
that.
High. They were asking me
really personal questions and I'm going, sure.
Oh, no, they forgot I was in there. And Ellen DeGeneres, it was her first season. It was before I just, I love you, Ellen, but man, overkill. Anyway, but she was so funny and I had that damn gas on my face for like 20 minutes. And I remember I was laying in the chair literally waving my arms and legs going, ah! And at one point I'm like, I'm too high. I'm too high. So I took it off for about 5 minutes and then I was like, screw this.
I know.
And then the dentist finally comes in. She goes, are you high? I said, hell yes, I am.
I was on it 45 minutes once.
They left me
for 45 minutes.
Are you sure that wasn't a Playboy party in Manhattan or something?
I think he was hitting on me because then he asked me personal questions.
Gosh.
And he forgot to clean my teeth.
Guys, as usual, the show has flown by. I want to thank...
What show's that?
The Bob Dean Show.
Yay.
I'm rolling my eyes, Louie. You're right. I got to get rid of the glasses, too. I want to thank my reoccurring special co-host, Kathy St. George. You're a delight. And you hadn't been in the bar. You hadn't been to see me in Beverly Hills for a while.
I have to come and see you.
Because you're all over the place. And Louie LaCava, thank you, Louie. Honestly, there have been several people that are waiting for your re-up. And then when we could get my friend Beth Lavino on, Beth, everybody look at the camera and say, Beth Lavino,
Beth Lavino.
Is fun, right?
You must come on the
You
show.
Must come. But anyway, thanks again. Then sure. John Dillinger's face. I know. Hello.
I'm going to get a picture as soon as
Along with all
is
these
all.
Other fantastic artifacts. I know you guard these. And see, I collect stuff like this too. I don't have anything this cool.
I have big boards off houses.
That's awesome. Because that's you know, it's gonna, cool. they're going to tear them down anyway.
That's true. Yeah, some of them falling down with age, and you just go in there and fight spiders for them.
So. Well, I want to look up the house that you were just telling about, Ma Barker's shootout, but it's still there, and they've moved it and not torn it down.
It's like Okeechobee or
Okeechobee.
Okeechobee, yeah. That's it.
It's a lake. You're looking for
Lake Okeechobee. Okeechobee. It's huge, and it's in Central Florida, where it sucks. I mean, Lake Okeechobee is beautiful, but the rest of Central Florida, hello, humidity, mosquitoes, love bugs.
But you know what? My skin stayed amazing, if that helped. My hair looked like shit.
It helped the hair on my back curl.
Oh, you don't do that.
No. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen, because there's the Hairy Back Man LA is coming to a Facebook page near you. Thank you guys very much. Love
you. Thank you.
Remember, subscribe on iTunes. Bye. Yay.
I was going to say when they mugged you.